unless a stronger experience arises to interrupt your attention. Then include this stronger experience in the meditation, feeling it fully and naming it softly for as long as it persists. Hearing, 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 or sad, sad, sad. When it passes, return to naming the breath until another strong experience arises. Soon you will be ready to bring the practice of naming and inquiry directly to the difficulties and hindrances that arise in your life. The five most common difficulties that the Buddha described as the chief hindrances to awareness and clarity are grasping and anger, sleepiness and restlessness, and doubt. Of course, you will inevitably encounter many other hindrances and demons, and will even create new ones of your own. Whatever comes, you will need to begin to see these basic difficulties clearly as they arise. Let me give you examples of approaching two of these hindrances, grasping and anger, through meditation and naming. Grasping and wanting are two names for the most painful aspects of desire. Because our language uses the word desire in so many ways, it is helpful to sort them out. There are beneficial desires, such as the desire for the well-being of others, the desire for awakening, the creative desires that express the positive aspects of passion and beauty. There are painful aspects of desire, the desires of addiction, greed, blind ambition, or unending inner hunger. Through meditative awareness, we can bring an attention that can sort out and know the many forms of desire. In beginning to name the demons, we can especially look for the difficult sides of desire, the grasping and wanting mind. When we look at wanting, we experience the part of ourselves that is never content, that always says, "If only I had something more, that would make me happy. Some other relationship, some other job, some more comfortable cushion, less noise, cooler temperature, warmer temperature, more money, a little more sleep last night, then I would be fulfilled." As we work to observe the wanting and grasping without condemning it, we can learn to be aware of this aspect of our nature without being caught up in it. When it arises, we can feel it fully, naming our experience, hunger, wanting, longing, or whatever it is. Name it softly the whole time it is present, repeating the name every few seconds, 5, 10, 20 times until it ends. As you note it, be conscious of what happens. How long does this kind of desire last? Does it intensify first, or just fade away? How does it feel in the body? What parts of the body are affected by it? The gut? The breath? The eyes? What does it feel like in the heart? In the mind? When it is present, are you happy or agitated? Open or closed? As you name it, see how it moves and changes. When we look, we see that wanting creates tension, that it is actually painful. Observing more closely, we notice that it is also fleeting, without essence. This aspect of desire is actually a form of imagination and accompanying feelings that come and go in our body and mind. Of course, at other times it seems very real. Oscar Wilde said, "I can resist anything but temptation." Do not confuse desire with pleasure. There is nothing wrong with enjoying pleasant experiences. Given the many difficulties we often face in life, enjoyment is wonderful to have. However, the wanting mind grasps at the pleasure. We are taught in this culture that if we can grasp enough pleasurable experiences quickly, one after another, our life will be happy. By following a good game of tennis with a delicious dinner, a fine movie, then wonderful sex and sleep, a good morning jog, a fine hour of meditation, an excellent breakfast, and off to an exciting morning of work, happiness will last. Our society is masterful at perpetuating this ruse. But will this satisfy the heart? What happens when we do fulfill wanting? It often brings on more wanting. The whole process can become very tiring and empty. What am I going to do next? Well, I'll just get some more. the process of such unskillful desire is endless, because peace comes not from fulfilling our wants, but from the moment that dissatisfaction ends. When wanting is filled, there comes a moment of satisfaction, not from the pleasure, but from stopping of the grasping. Understanding, freedom, and joy are the treasures that naming the demon of desire brings us. We discover that underneath unskillful desire is a deep spiritual longing for beauty, for abundance and completeness. Naming desire can lead us to discover this truest desire. One old teacher of mine said, "The problem with desire is that you do not desire deeply enough. Why not desire it all? You don't like what you have and want what you don't have. Simply reverse this. Want what you have and don't want what you don't have. Here you will find true fulfillment." By studying desire, we begin to include all of its possibilities in our spiritual life. Anger is more obviously painful than desire. While desire and the wanting mind are seductive, the opposite energy of anger and aversion is more clearly unpleasant. It is a force that pushes away, condemns, judges, or hates some experience in our life. The demon of anger and aversion has many faces and guises and can be found in such forms as fear, boredom, ill will, judgment, and criticism. Like desire, anger is an extremely powerful force. It can be experienced toward someone or something that is present with us now, or that is far away in time or place. We sometimes experience great anger over past events that are long over and about which we can do nothing. We can even get furious about something that has not happened, but that we only imagine might happen. When it is strong in the mind, anger colors our entire experience of life. When we begin to name the faces of anger, we can feel for ourselves how fear, judgment, and boredom are all forms of aversion. When we examine them, we see that they are based on our dislike of some aspect of experience. Naming the forms of anger presents us with an opportunity to find freedom in their midst. At first, name the state softly, saying, "anger, anger," or "hate, hate," as long as it persists. As you name it, note how long it lasts, what it turns into, how it arises again. Name it and notice how anger feels. Where in the body do you sense it? Does your body become hard or soft with anger? Do you notice different kinds of anger? When anger arises, what is its temperature, its effect on the breath, its degree of pain? How does it affect the mind? Is the mind smaller, more rigid, tighter? Do you sense tension or contraction? Listen to the voices that come along with it. What do they say? "I'm afraid of this. I hate that. I don't want to experience that." Can we name the demon and make our hearts big enough to allow both the anger and the subject of the anger to show us their dance? As we listen, we can also sense the origins of anger. Almost always, the roots of anger are in one of two difficult states, which arise just before the anger appears. We become angry either when we are hurt and in pain, or when we are afraid. Pay attention to your own life and see if this is true. The next time anger and irritation spring up, see if just before they arose, you felt fear or hurt. If you pay attention to the fear or pain first, does the anger even appear? Anger shows us precisely where we are stuck, where our limits are, where we cling to belief and fears. Aversion is like a warning signal that lights up and says, "attached, attached." The strength of our anger reveals the amount of our attachment. Yet we know our attachment is optional. We do not have to be bound by it or driven by it. Usually, our anger is based on our limited ideas of what should happen. We think we know how God should have made the world, how someone should have treated us, what is our just due. But what do we really know? Are we that in touch with the divine plan for the sorrows